Venezuelan Supreme Court has asked the Constituent Assembly to lift the parliamentary immunity of opposition leader Juan Guaido, a move that can pave the way for Guaido to face prosecution. Guaido, who declared himself interim president in January, has called on his supporters to continue street rallies in protest of power and water shortages. The call came shortly after the government of President Nicolas Maduro announced a power rationing plan to tackle prolonged blackouts. Caracas blames the power outages on the U.S. and the opposition, accusing them of trying to sabotage the country's electricity system. Meanwhile, the U.S. says that it will do everything possible so that Guaido's representative can fill Venezuela's seat in the Organization of American States. Stay with us for tonight's debate.
The Venezuelan government has announced a plan for electricity rationing to tackle the recent prolonged blackouts across the Latin American country. President Nicolas Maduro announced a 30-day plan after his government said it was shortening the working day and keeping schools closed due to blackouts. Maduro said the aim of the plan is to guarantee water service throughout the country. The government blamed the major blackouts on a U.S.-led sabotage.
Venezuela will step up efforts to repeal all kinds of hostilities by the U.S. government, including the electricity area. Our nation will succeed.
The opposition, however, alleges that the electricity system has collapsed due to government's negligence and accuses officials of hiding the truth.
Those who usurp political power in this country will not be able to repair the electricity system because they are the ones who let it collapse.
Venezuela has been in the throes of a political crisis after the opposition leader Juan Guaido declared himself as interim president. The crisis was worsened by public anger over shortages of basic needs and eye-popping inflation. Caracas says the U.S. has waged an economic crisis to oust President Maduro. People here has rejected the so-called humanitarian aid offered to the country, saying the source of the crisis is the U.S. sanctions and its hegemonic policies.
Humanitarian aid is a trap by U.S. and its allies. If they want to help my country, they must return now billions of dollars they confiscated from our oil industry.
People here say they hope that the power rationing will temporarily resolve the electricity crisis, which has worsened already dire economic and living conditions in the country, which sits on the world's largest proven oil reserves.
Frequent power blackouts seem to bother many Venezuelans these days. While the opposition blames the government for the electricity crisis, authorities have pledged to resolve the current situation, which they believe stems from the United States cyber attacks. Jesus Silva, Press TV, Caracas.
Well, joining us on tonight's debate, we've got university lecturer Daniel Kovalik, who's joining us from Pittsburgh, and also senior analyst at Foreign Policy in Focus, Ian Williams, who's with us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Kovalik in Pittsburgh. Venezuela's Supreme Court, as we know, has asked for opposition leader Juan Guaido's parliamentary immunity to be revoked, a move that could lead to his arrest. In your opinion, what kind of outcome could such a move have?
Well, first of all, let me say that they have every right to arrest Juan Guaido. In any other country, he'd be in jail already. He's not only declared himself president, he's been going on diplomatic meetings purporting to be president. He's named new heads of Venezuela's oil company, Citgo. And most egregiously, is accepting billions of dollars in Venezuelan monies that the U.S. has seized in the U.S. and then given to him. No other country would put up with this. Now, if they do move forward and arrest him, you know, it certainly could be a pretext for the U.S. to invade or whatnot. That's why they haven't done it so far. They've been afraid of what would happen. But at this point, I think their view is, look, what else can the U.S. do? They, you know, they are trying to run this country into the ground. And Venezuela has every right to defend itself, and one of the ways to do that is to arrest Juan Guaido for high treason, which, again, what he is doing would be considered high treason in any country on earth, including the United States.
Mr. Williams, in New York, the U.S. has repeatedly warned the Maduro government that arresting or harming Guaido would have serious consequences. Is that going to be an impediment if this immunity is revoked, as the U.S. has been looking for some pretext to further get involved in the crisis in Venezuela?
I think we need to get some terminology straight, first of all. Guaido, whatever his politics, did not declare himself. The democratically elected National Assembly declared him to be the president using perfectly legitimate clauses in the democratically accepted constitution. That constitution has been set aside. The Supreme Court is a kangaroo court packed out with Maduro appointees, and the Constituent Assembly that he's referring to is in fact, once again, a packed out assembly. There's no legitimacy in the Constitution that was set up because the Maduro regime had lost the elections to the National Assembly. So, I mean, there is a lot of room to go around here. And by the way, I've got to say that I am not in favor of intervention, not just on principle grounds, but on pragmatic grounds. Any intervention led by the U.S. since 1945 has been fairly disastrous for all concerned. However, the legitimacy question here is very important. Maduro is hanging on to power. He's arrested the opposition. The power cuts had already started before the so-called intervention. The sanctions that came in recently were immaterial to the total economic chaos and kleptocracy of the Maduro regime, where billions of dollars of the Venezuelan people's money have been siphoned abroad for the benefit of the elite. The disparity between rich and poor in Venezuela is greater now than it has been for decades, and it's accentuated over the years of the Maduro presidency. He has not benefited the poor. The poor are now being met by armed vigilantes on the streets if they protest against the power, and they're fed with really spurious excuses about cyber attacks. It is incompetence and corruption and theft that is pulling the electricity system down. It is not cyber attacks. Wouldn't surprise me if the US had considered that, but I don't believe they have done. No one's produced any tangible evidence of it so far. I'm afraid Maduro's credibility is somewhat limited in the rest of the world. He has very few friends left, and they're very, very expedient friends when he does have them.
Mr. Kovalik, would you like to respond to what our guest, Mr. Williams in New York, stated specifically on the legitimacy question of who is the real president in Venezuela?
Yes. Well, he's completely wrong about what he says on a number of counts. First of all, the United Nations and the OAS both recognize Nicolas Maduro as the legitimate president. Nicolas Maduro won a valid election last May against a legitimate opposition figure, Henry Falcone from the business community. 46% or 47% of the electorate voted, and of those, 67% voted for Nicolas Maduro. I've seen charts that show, in fact, that he got more percentage of the electorate in his election than Donald Trump did. Well, of course, because Donald Trump lost by 3 million votes. And more than a lot of leaders in the region. No one has really credibly claimed that there was any vote fraud. In fact, you know, Jimmy Carter said it's the best electoral system in the world that he's ever observed, and he's observed 92 different country elections. So the fact that there's no question that he is the legitimate president. Juan Guaido was handpicked, we know this, by Donald Trump and Mike Pence to declare himself president. There is no constitutional basis for what he's doing, despite what my colleague has said. There could be a claim, made if the president, Nicolas Maduro, was unable to fulfill his office. There could be a move made, for someone like Guaido to be declared president. But Nicolas Maduro is perfectly capable to hold office. It really would be like Nancy Pelosi in this country saying, well, you know, Trump's an idiot and incompetent and So I declare myself president. No one would take that seriously. And that's exactly what's happened in Venezuela. Moreover, for him to say that the sanctions have not been a part of Venezuela's economic woes is just silliness. The UN expert who was tasked to investigate that very issue, Alfred de Zayas, has concluded, in fact, that the sanctions have been responsible for the lion's share of the economic woes in Venezuela since 2015. Moreover, you now have the U.S. seizing Venezuelan revenue, billions of dollars in oil revenue, and turning it over to this Juan Guaido. The idea that that is not hurting the Venezuelan economy just makes absolutely no sense. You have a real economic war that it's been waged against the U.S., against this country for years. It has now been ratcheted up by the Trump administration, and it is crippling that country, and it's meant to cripple it. That's the other thing. The whole intention is to cripple it. And it's doing its job. Even the New York Times, by the way, acknowledge that in particular, the electric backup system that Venezuela has, that they've been unable to get replacement parts for that system because of the sanctions. And again, to ignore that fact is frankly just disingenuous.
Ian Williams, on the Russian troops presence in Venezuela, Donald Trump has reacted by saying Russia needs to get out. How far do you think the U.S.-Russia tensions could go on? And why has Russia chose to add itself to the equation at this point in time?
Well, the Russians like tweaking the eagle's feathers. I mean, Putin can't keep out of this. He loves to tweak Trump and the U.S. for sort of fairly well-established reasons. It doesn't make it any more legitimate. And it really distracts because, excuse me, if foreign intervention is wrong, what are the Cubans and the Russians doing there? You know, we really need to get back to the core point. Is my colleague there invoked one UN report. He's ignoring all of the other reports, like from the Human Rights Commission, about the arrests of the opposition, about clandestine killings by the armed forces, about the death squads going around. All of those UN reports are really much more legitimate than the one he's talking about. And they contributed to the election last year, where the vote might have been fair, but it's not really a fair election when half the opposition is locked up or threatened with court action. And that's what happened. That's why Maduro's legitimacy was challenged by the rest of the world. Because the election was unfair. The voting may have been entirely fair. The voting probably held up very well compared with your average American election, you know, hanging chads and all. But if you ban the candidates, if you arrest the candidates, that rather detracts from the fairness of an election by most people's standards. But, you know, getting back to the electricity, the Venezuela for many years sold its oil to the U.S. It operated in the U.S. It sold gas to the U.S. over and over. The U.S. paid. It paid lots of money. This wasn't sanctions Iranian style. The U.S. was not waging economic warfare. It made it very plain it wasn't very happy with Chavez and then Maduro. But it did not take overt action. What's happened is there's been a buildup of total kleptocracy, where the government's inefficient and corrupt system meant that the local currency was being swapped for dollars, which were then accumulating in the hands of the elite, who managed to get hold of all of the luxury goods that they wanted, while ordinary people, for the last few years, have suffered from shortages of flour, sugar, medicine, and all of the other things, totally unrelated to sanctions. And similarly with the electricity. The half of the staff of the oil company were fired for political incorrectness. And then you've managed to wonder why it doesn't function very efficiently, where oil production is lower than it's been for a long, long time, and the revenue doesn't come in on the same scale. Now, this is incompetence. The trouble with Chavez, and more especially Maduro, is that they have given socialism a bad name. They keep getting called socialists by the right wing in the US and other parts of the world, And it's giving socialism a bad name. This is not socialism. This is kleptocracy. This is a government by thieves, for thieves. They're not governing on behalf of the poor people there, who are worse off now than they've ever been. The elites in Caracas are doing very well, thank you very much. Their money is offshore. The stuff that they have in the country, they can spend. A life of luxury. But when it comes to the poor, they are suffering. And they're the ones now revolting and being attacked. The government is acting against its core bases. It's got troops and armed militia, vigilante groups, going into the poor areas that a few years ago were Hugo Chavez's bastions. This is not an outside breakdown. The U.S. should be involved, but the Venezuelan government is one of the major perpetrators of all of this.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Kowalik, you were shaking your head there. I'd like to get your thoughts on what Ian Williams just said. Also, talk to us about the issue of Russia. Ian Williams believes that Russians being there is a form of foreign intervention. Is it foreign intervention when they're there at the request of Caracas?
Right. So first of all, the answer, of course, is it's a certain form of intervention. But yes, when the government asks for help from Russia, it's not illegal intervention. It's completely allowed by the UN Charter. You are allowed to ask for assistance from other countries. The US is just mad that it's the Russians who are there. It's the US who wants control over Venezuela's oil. And it is unlawful under Article 2.4 of the UN Charter for a country not invited into another country to intervene in that country, which is exactly what the U.S. has been doing for years. My colleague forgets, he claims, oh, the U.S. has never really acted against Venezuela and against Chavez, forgets that they helped instigate and supported a coup in which Chavez was kidnapped and taken out of office illegally in 2002, and the U.S. quickly recognized that government. And by the way, the two main opposition figures, and the only ones that I know of who are in jail or under house arrest right now, were two figures, Enrique Capriles and Leopoldo Lopez, who were not only involved in the 2002 coup against the duly elected president, I don't think my colleague would dispute that, Hugo Chavez, they actually were involved in a kidnapping of a minister. Again, in any other country, those people would have been tried for treason by now and would be either in jail for life or would have been put up before a firing squad. But again, people like to forget that is true. Moreover, it is not true that the poor have abandoned Maduro. If you look at the protests in Venezuela, by the way, I just got back from there last night, you will see that those protesting against the government tend to be lighter skinned, better off people, the elites, by the way, that my colleague is mentioning. They're the ones who want Maduro out. And it's the poor and darker skinned people who have benefited from the revolution that are protesting in favor of Maduro. What is being portrayed is completely opposite from what is happening there. And I was there. I was in Caracas. I was in another town about 6 hours west of Caracas. Yes, there are problems. Yes, there are difficulties. But there is food. And the government's providing food now through the CLAP program to the poor every 15 days. They've built 2.5 million homes, even through this crisis. And before the sanctions were brought against Venezuela in 2015, poverty and extreme poverty had continued to be reduced by the Bolivarian government. And inequality continued to be reduced. The sanctions have made the difference in making that struggle nearly impossible.
Okay, regardless of the differences that you two gentlemen have, I'm sure you agree on one thing, and that's this impasse and this crisis in Venezuela must come to an end. Ian Williams, in 30 seconds or less, how do you think that impasse should come to an end, this leadership impasse?
I think Maduro should put himself up for election. If the elections are so free and fair, he should have nothing to worry about. There should be new elections for the National Assembly and for the presidency, and under international supervision, if necessary, preferably, in fact.
Okay,
that whole process. And if they can agree on that, they both claim to be democratically supportive. And by the way, the dangerous argument here is if Guaido is accepted as president, as he is by many countries, he can invite foreign intervention as well, which is a very dangerous road to go down.
Mr. Kovalik, your thoughts on the same question. How can this leadership impasse come to an end?
Look, it seems to me, and again, I just got back from Venezuela and talking with people, some in the government, it looks like Maduro may be willing to stand for early elections. But I don't think it's fair for any of us to say that he should or shouldn't do that. That's up to the Venezuelan people, the Venezuelan government. No other country in the world. Are you going to say Trump should have early elections? I mean, Trump's more dangerous than any leader on earth. No one would say he should have early elections. You know, it's just the height of
okay,
of
we are running short of time, gentlemen.
Call for another president to have early elections. He just stood for election last May.
Okay, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. We're running short of time on this edition of The Debate. Thanks to University Lecturer Daniel Kovalik joining us from Pittsburgh, and also thanks to Senior Analyst of Foreign Policy and Focus Ian Williams joining us from New York, and a special thanks to you, our viewers, for staying with us on tonight's debate. I'm Badia Honadar, and it's good night for now.